down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, did you know that we see up to 10,000 ads every day? Yes, you heard that right. We're literally bombarded with images wanting us to consume products. How can we take a step back and decide which images are good for us and which are just trying to get us to consume things? My next guest's latest book deals with just these issues. It's great to welcome Maureen Tanguy. She's the author of The Visual Detox, How to Consume Media Without Letting It Consume You. You're very welcome to the program, Maureen. How are you?
Yes, really well, and really nice to be speaking to you.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself, Maureen, because as I understand it, you're somebody who is involved with contemporary art, art investment. You've done a lot of work with councils and corporations around public art. So where does your experience in those areas connect with the 10,000 ads that we are trying to avoid every day?
Yes, of course. So I've been in the art world for 15 years. I was managing the gallery of Steve Lazaridis, who discovered Banksy, when I was 21 years old. And I think I've been obsessed since the start on the place of the arts within our visual culture. And I think what was problematic for me is the sector I was in, the art world, was incredibly traditional. So it was just designed for a few people and ultimately was only in a luxury setting. And I felt that, and you've seen through the book that there are several mental health studies highlighting the importance of the arts. And I felt it was shocking that we couldn't integrate art in all contexts and for everyone and have artists much more central to society. So 9 years ago, I built the first talent agency in the art world. It's very much like a label you would have in music or like a talent agency for actors. But we therefore do loads of public art in a lot of the cities around you. We were behind the kickoff of the World Cup with art in 2022. We basically integrated art in a lot of contexts. And I think for us, it's really important because, for instance, The Guardian last week just published that 4 out of 5 billboards in the UK are in working class areas. So I live in a very privileged area in London, and I will get to see art and nature and tiny shops. But actually, if you live in a poorer area, you will be constantly bombarded with commercial imagery and not have access to culture and not have access to the same visual environment. And that's what really prompted the book, so that everything that we know about the value of the arts and all the positives that comes with it is ultimately more equal for everyone.
And are those billboards not cited by, say, the number of people passing or the number of people driving by? Is that not the mecca for advertisers, that the more, I suppose, eyeballs that they can clock, the more value the site that they will put such billboard ads?
Well, I think that would be one way to look at it, and I'm sure a nice way for them to say it. But I think in reality, it's because you have a lot of lobbying groups in more wealthy areas will be against it and
sure,
against the,
sure,
like having billboards up. You know, I feel realistically, you know, you've implemented those infrastructures in groups of people that are already vulnerable and are unlikely to be able to be lobbying as much as.
Okay. No, that's a fair point. And tell me this, if 65% of us, you tell us, are visual learners, so that means we learn more from pictures and diagrams than we do from anything else. So I'm still trying to struggle with 10,000 images that I could actually see 10,000 images in one day. Where did you get that figure from?
So actually, it's quite conservative, not to panic you as you're still trying to kind of like literally digest this actual data, because I think it's likely to be more, but we didn't want, I think we took several studies from the amount of ads and ad exposure that you'll be getting, but also in light of the fact that only 1 person out of 2 live in cities. So of course, if you're in the countryside, you'll be much less likely to be as exposed, right? So we tried to balance it from data
sure.
that we had on the digital exposure and the ad exposure. And it's actually quite low because it's only increasing. When you're watching your movie, you're now likely to check up your phone, and it's okay not to feel, you don't have to feel guilty about it, but it's just to show that we are multiplying the amounts of screen we get exposed to and the amount of ad exposure as we speak. And yet we know that the more exposed we are to ads, the more miserable we're going to think, because obviously the more miserable you feel, the more you're going to consume. So we know that it has a terrible mental health impact. We also know that the young generation is very touched by this mental health crisis. And I think we can tie all of this together in terms of exposure to imagery.
So tell me this then, what tricks do advertisers use to get our attention? So there's all sorts of things like on YouTube where you have to skip the ads and you have to go through an ad before you want to get something. And I always just kind of look out the window when I'm waiting for the 3 or 4 seconds to go. But, you know, advertisers are smart people and they know how all this works. And as you say, it is a society of consumerism. But what tricks do they use to catch us?
I think that first of all is to say the stats that you said earlier. 65% of us are visual learners, but we haven't been taught to utilize that skill set. We're not taught visual education, and yet we know that we remember 60% of visuals. From our conversation today, you know, you will only remember 20%. So 60% is enormous. But the way in which you memorize visuals is very different to the way you memorize words, because it lands in the more primitive side of your brain, the amygdala, and you respond upon affects on visuals. You're much more analytical upon words. And I think that is the core difference to why subliminal messages, whether they are political or whether they are commercial, are ultimately much more powerful when using images, because they know they're going to get to your brain and your subconscious much better. And the more overexposure, the more likely they're going to be able to drive behaviors towards it.
So is that why if one is doing a PowerPoint presentation, one is advised always to use pictures and talk off them rather than putting up stats and numbers that you'll just lose people with?
Yes, and it's also why we haven't encouraged visual education, because realistically, so far, it's an amazing playground, because people are undereducated visually, and you can constantly put messaging and reinforce things towards them, and they haven't exercised their visual critical thinking. I mean, especially in the rise of AI, this is being challenged as we speak, because obviously suddenly the idea of a visual critical thinking helping you to identify if that image is edited, what is the source, what software was used, is AI used to generate it, is becoming more relevant. So ironically, the rise of AI is helping putting back this topic right at the forefront of today's society.
So, and as you mentioned AI there, there's a danger there with AI on the increase that we're going to need to develop visual, I suppose, critical thinking to fight against a sea of visual misinformation, as you say.
Yes, so I feel it's an act. There's several investments in the more private sector going to how do you unlearn and train the AI? Because AI ultimately, if you look at some of the main AI models, OpenAI and Midjourney, are trained using a lot of existing visual biases and what we find already in our society. So we're going to have to challenge a lot of what we see. As we know, technology evolves really fast. So while we can hope, Nick Clegg at Meta said that he was hoping for the rise of watermarks and the rise of, you know, structure to help us seeing, I think we're also going to have to educate our kids and educate ourselves to challenge what we're seeing and not just trust what we're seeing. There's an idea that as I speak, you think that's my opinion and somebody else could have a different opinion. But with images, we always tend to think those are the truths, you know. We tend to think, oh, that is it. We've seen it. So we have to constantly think, well, actually, that might be wrong. You know, that might be false.
Okay. So ultimately, do you think advertising is a lie? That it's only there because it makes you want to be happy to buy such a thing? So, like, they are trying to tell us, oh, if you buy this bar of chocolate, you know, you're walking on this beautiful beach with sunshine. And it is designed, I suppose, ultimately to mislead, isn't it?
I think there's a place for commerce, and I think there's always intentions behind every visual out there. Artists will have intention too. My problem is more that 99% of the 10,000 images is commercial. I think ultimately this is about balancing intention. It would be amazing to have visual narrative around social cohesion, new community, loads of different things amongst commerce.
Right.
But the fact that commerce is taking on 99% of that consumption of visuals, that is my problem. Now, I don't think it's about eradicating commerce. It's about the fact that right now you have more chances as I walk around London to see images of Coca-Cola than to see art or to see nature. That okay. is my, more my problem.
All
but
right.
I think it's not eradicating by any means the commerce, but it's balancing it out.
Okay, well, the book is called The Visual Detox, How to Consume Media Without Letting It Consume You. The author is Maureen Tanguy. Thank you, Maureen, for joining us today.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.